should we really be considering this in most of our asthmatics?
For asthmatics, the fact that we haven't been able to really show this is a little alarming to most folks.
I'm not a fan of propensity matching studies. They're extremely limited.
Welcome everyone to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks so much for joining us on this podcast. Yet another exciting educational topic that I can't wait to dive into. Can't wait to discuss this particular topic, article, and really get the expert thoughts of my amazing co-host here on CCPEM, Dr. Peter W., Dr. John Greenwood, Dr. Rob Rodriguez. So as we normally do on the podcast, before we delve into the education topic at hand, let me check in with my co-stars. Rob, I'm going to go all the way out to you. We are recording here mid-March, just a little bit beyond St. Patrick's Day here in the United States. How are you doing out west?
Doing great. Just had a wonderful week with my son who is visiting for his spring break out here in California. We got to Joshua Tree, which is a surreal environment. I had never been there. It was pretty wonderful.
Outstanding. That's great to hear. Well, let me go back across the U.S., check in with Dr. Greenwood. John, a few podcasts ago, you talked to us about a wonderful course you were having up at Penn. Has that occurred? And if so, how'd it go?
We did, in fact, hold the Revive Resuscitation Conference this past weekend. It was on Saturday. It was in person, half day of didactics, half day of hands-on sim. Had an awesome day. Over 120 in-person attendees were there to participate in the conference. We also had at least 60 online. We're still waiting on final numbers. But overall, the feedback was just really positive. It was great to be in a close circle of people with like interests who wanted to learn more about cardiac arrest resuscitation and post-resuscitation care. It was a great day overall. So much fun. So much so that we are looking already ahead to next year. And we also will be working on posting a lot of the talks from the weekend online over the next year. So a lot to look forward to.
That is great news. Congratulations for our inaugural course, outstanding attendance. And I'm confident all had an amazing, amazing time. So we'll certainly look for those links. We can put them in our handouts that are accompanying subsequent podcasts. And then we'll look forward to hearing to when you've locked the dates in for next year. All right, not to be outdone by visiting Joshua Tree, the Revive Conference. Peter, what's going on in New Orleans?
So we just enjoyed four separate parades to celebrate not just Irish heritage here, but also Italian heritage in the New Orleans area, the nice little melting pot. So it's been a fun last couple of days and weekends to enjoy the weather and the environment.
That's great. Well, as I've said before in previous podcasts, I love checking in with you and seeing what's going on in New Orleans. Great, great time. All right, well, let's now shift back to really why we're here on the podcast. Let's talk about a critical topic, a critical care topic, one that we have frequently discussed in previous episodes, and that is non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. But specifically, let's drill down on a patient condition, patient diagnosis, and that is asthma or severe asthma exacerbation. I think we know, and all of us feel comfortable quickly going to non-invasive ventilation for acute COPD and acute cardiogenic pulmonary edema exacerbations. The literature is pretty good on that, but the literature is not necessarily so robust when using this in severe asthma exacerbation. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this and really get your guys' opinions on this is because there was an article published just in the last 1 to 2 weeks. This was out of Critical Care Medicine. Lead author was Dr. Abbott and colleagues. And it's titled The Association Between Non-Invasive Positive Pressure Ventilation Use and Clinical Outcomes During a Severe Asthma Exacerbation, a Cohort Study. So it's circulating back in the literature, and I think it's very timely, Should we really be considering this in most of our asthmatics? And if so, is there the same benefit that we see in, say, COPD or acute pulmonary edema exacerbation? So to get us started, Rob, I'm going to turn to you. Set the stage, give us the background on this particular study.
Yeah, Mike, this is an extremely common problem, as everybody knows. Acute asthma exacerbations account for nearly 1.5 million ED visits in the US per year. Of these 1.5 million visits, approximately 180,000, or around 10 to 15%, wind up getting admitted to the hospital. And of these 180,000 that are admitted, about 10% are admitted to the ICU. And 2% of those admitted wind up getting intubated and put on mechanical ventilation. A notable point is that in-hospital mortality increases nearly a hundredfold when an asthmatic receives invasive mechanical ventilation. So it's a big step in mortality. And so we also know that non-invasive ventilation reduces mortality and hospital length of stay in patients with acute COPD and CHF exacerbations. We use that all the time. We have a lot of data regarding its benefit in those specific populations. But in contrast, the data regarding non-invasive ventilation in severe asthma is very limited, and it does remain controversial. Recent international practice guidelines, in fact, were unable to give a solid recommendation regarding the utility of non-invasive ventilation for the treatment of severe asthma and acute respiratory failure. So that really leads us into why they did this study. And so, Peter, you want to let us know what were the objectives of this study?
Absolutely, Rob. Thank you for teeing it up. So, two objectives. The first was to describe the trends in non-invasive positive pressure ventilation use, the trends in endotracheal intubation and in-hospital mortality among adult and pediatric patients hospitalized for asthma. The second objective was to describe the association between non-invasive positive pressure ventilation use and the receipt of endotracheal intubation and in-hospital mortality among patients admitted to the ICU for their asthma exacerbations. Now, a little bit about the methods. It's an observational analysis of patients hospitalized for asthma within the New York and Florida state inpatient databases using healthcare cost and utilization project. In New York, the dates were between 2005 to 2018, and in Florida, 2005 to 2019. The patients that were included, remember it's peds and adults, so ages 5 to 80, and those admitted to the ICU for severe asthma exacerbations. So the patients that were excluded, anybody with a concomitant diagnosis of COPD, understanding that COPD really doesn't have a reversible disease component per se. Those with neuromuscular disease were excluded. Those with obesity or obstructive sleep apnea associated problems or asthma COPD overlap. And those admitted to a rehab or long-term care hospital were excluded, and anyone who did not report a residence in either New York or Florida. Lastly, those who received non-invasive positive pressure ventilation for post-extubation support were excluded. Now, what was the exposure? The exposure was simply receipt of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. What were their primary outcomes that they looked at? Those who got intubated, those who received endotracheal intubation, and then a measure of the in-hospital mortality. How do they look at the statistics here? The statistical analysis determined the annual trend of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation use, as well as endotracheal intubations and in-hospital mortality as a proportion of the total asthma hospitalizations. And then lastly, the propensity matched cases for those receiving and not receiving non-invasive positive pressure ventilation.
Thanks, Peter. Very helpful to kind of review the objectives along with the methods. So we're looking at essentially an analysis of databases that it looks like these investigators didn't want to mix in the COVID population. So they had a large range, but stopped short of when really COVID took hold. So, all right, you guys set the stage really well, what the study, how the methods were carried out. John, you're going to bring us home. Tell us what they found.
So the authors included a large number of hospitalizations. This was almost 300,000 asthma exacerbation hospitalizations. And in the adult patient population, a little over 27,000 patients were admitted to the ICU, and almost 10% received non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. And the adult patients who received non-invasive were more likely to be younger in age, male, Black or African American, have Medicaid insurance, and were admitted to a hospital for asthma three or more times during the preceding year. So these were high-frequency presenters to the hospital for their asthma, and unfortunately, probably poorly controlled by chronic medications. And these patients also were more likely to be treated in a teaching facility or a hospital that had over 500 beds, so large teaching institutions. Now, when we look at the pediatric population, they included about 14,000 patients that were admitted to the ICU for asthma. And in these patients, a little under 13% received non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. And these patients were a little bit older, so closer to the adult age range of 13 to 17, actually female, and also had a Medicare or Medicaid insurance status. They were more likely being admitted to a teaching hospital as well, or a large institution with greater than 500 inpatient beds. Now, the trends in non-invasive use, intubation, and mortality were quite interesting. In the adults, when they looked at non-invasive use, they found that compared to the beginning of the study period to the end, non-invasive use increased from 1.2% to over 7% in 2018. So used a lot more frequently towards the end of the study period compared to in the middle to early 2000s. The intubation rate stayed pretty stable at about 3.7 versus 4%, and mortality was not all that much different, as noted in the data analysis part, of 0.3 to 0.4% mortality in adults. So very low. This was a small number of patients who died from their acute asthma exacerbation. When we look at the pediatric data, non-invasive use also increased substantially from less than 1% all the way up to 7% in 2018. The intubation rate stayed about the same, hovering around 1%, as did the in-hospital mortality of about 0.1%. So it was also pretty stable over the course of the study period. Now, if we turn to non-invasive positive pressure use and intubation in their propensity matched analysis, they noted something a little bit different. So in this analysis, they found that non-invasive positive pressure ventilation was associated with a lower risk of intubation compared to those who did not receive it. And this was a little bit of a difference between 15 and 29% of a intubation rate. Now, the pediatric population, they also found the same thing, a lower risk of intubation in those who received non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. So this was a 2.4% rate compared to a 4.7% rate in the pediatric group. Next, we turn to the non-invasive positive pressure use group and in-hospital mortality. And there was a lower risk of in-hospital mortality in adults who receive positive pressure ventilation. This was a difference between 1.2 versus 3%. And when we looked at pediatric patients, there was no difference in mortality between those who used it and those who did not.
Great job, John, reviewing a fair amount of results here on a very large cohort study of, as you alluded to, almost 300,000 hospitalizations for asthma. I think if I heard you right, in general, the mortality and intubation rates still were low. We used non-invasive ventilation a lot more frequently, but when doing propensity matched analyses, it was associated with lower risk of intubation, lower mortality in adults, lower risk of intubation in kids, but no change in mortality. So very, very interesting. I think it's important, as we've done when we do these deep dive analyses on various research studies that we talk about here on the podcast, what are those limitations? Well, I already mentioned some of them. This is an observational study. It's not a randomized particular study, and it's using an administrative database. So they're looking for specific ICD-9 and then subsequently ICD-10 codes. And I found something interesting in terms of the overall inclusion of patients. And John, you alluded to this, I think, early on in terms of the results, whereby those adult patients often had several visits in the preceding year. So even if these patients came in, had multiple ICU admissions, in their selection of this database, they just randomly selected one of those ICU encounters. So a little bit of a limitation there. Importantly, they didn't really dive down into what mode of non-invasive ventilation they were using. Was it CPAP? Was it BiPAP? In terms of the treatments, in an admin database, you're looking for ICD-9 or ICD-10 codes. There's not a whole lot of detail or granular detail on those physiologic parameters, the lab parameters. What did patients get treated? What did they get treated in the ED? Because they focused on identifying those patients that were admitted to the ICU with severe asthma and subsequently received one form of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. So a few things to point out with this particular study, but the authors summarize it, and their take-home points is in this large observational admin cohort study, overall, we are using non-invasive more frequently, but across the board, it didn't really change intubation rates or in-hospital mortality. However, when doing a propensity matched scoring, yes, using non-invasive ventilation in the adult lowered intubation rates, lowered mortality. And in the pediatric population, lowered those intubation rates. So now turning things back to kind of opening up our discussion, Peter, I'm going to go to you first. Thinking through this particular study, it's not the RCT, it's not a wealth of data like COPD, cardiogenic pulmonary edema, but it's another piece of literature analyzing non-invasive and asthmatics. And has your experience over the years, followed this study where you're using it more frequently. What are your thoughts?
So, a couple of thoughts on this. The first is that the data on COPD is a slam dunk. We should be using this, and it says leads to less intubations. You intubate more people, there's more complications in that population. For asthmatics, the fact that we haven't been able to really show this is a little alarming to most folks, right? Because, as we said earlier, invasive mechanical ventilation ticks up mortality for asthmatics. So you expect to see it. It requires a propensity matched scoring, which is designed to reduce selection bias. And that shows a benefit of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. Fewer people intubated. And again, you would assume if fewer people are receiving invasive mechanical ventilation, that mortality would be reduced. So I look at that as a positive.
Very good. So, thumbs up from you.
Two thumbs up.
All right. Two thumbs up. Rob, also two thumbs up. One thumb down. Where are you at with this?
I'm right in the middle. I'm not a fan of propensity matching studies. They're extremely limited in terms of confounders. It's very likely that the group that got it, that went straight to intubation without non-invasive ventilation, they're probably sicker. To me, that's kind of a point that gets lost in these propensity matching studies. that you can only match for so many variables, and it's not a great design to study this particular problem. Having said that, I agree with the message. I agree with Peter and everybody on the message that we should be looking at trying non-invasive ventilation in asthmatics more often. My challenge in using non-invasive ventilation in these asthmatics is that the acuity and the trajectory of their disease and the difficulties you have in putting a mask on these patients. Whereas a typical COPD patient has a longer disease trajectory, they haven't been sick as long, they've been breathing, they've been tachypneic and had excessive work of breathing for a while. And so you, in general, have more time to get them to adapt to the face mask. They often have had it before. And so there are a lot of advantages in using non-invasive ventilation in that population. And in the CHF population, they tend to love it. I mean, they feel that positive pressure. They get that immediate opening up of their airways, that PEEP effect. And, they tend to feel better right away. Asthmatics, on the other hand, they a very hyperacute trajectory in terms of their respiratory failure. And they're anxious, they're moving around, they're tripoding, and putting a full face mask on them is more difficult in my experience. That's not to say that I don't do it and that it should not be done. I do do it and I try it. But I wind up giving them a little bit of ketamine preemptively, sort of a dose of in the 30 to 50 range. And I sit there with them, and you have to really spend a lot of time with the patient and get them adjusted to the meds.
Some really great clinical pearls there, Rob. Thanks for sharing those. And no podcasts. Well, some podcasts are complete on our end, but we still got to weave in the ketamine component somewhere. So, all right, John, bring us home with your thoughts and utilization of this therapy for severe asthmatics.
Yeah, so a lot of great things have already been said. I'll just touch on one or two quick things. I think that my take home from this paper is not that the patients in this study were less frequently intubated. It's just they had a lower risk. And this is what propensity matching kind of does. It tells us about the difference in risk. So it's a subtle difference, but an important one, especially as we're talking about association and causality. In terms of clinical management, I think that one of the most important and valuable assets we have, if we are going to use BiPAP in asthma management, is the screen that accompanies that mask, which will show us what their minute ventilation is, what their tidal volumes are. And over time, if this is changing, that's incredibly valuable data, but you have to look for it. So you have to look and see if the obstruction pattern on the tidal volumes is changing. You have to look at the patients and also check a blood gas every 30 minutes, every hour, because I think a lot of times people get comforted by the fact that, oh, the respiratory rate is coming down. Well, that can be good, but that can be bad too. It can be terrible. And so if you're not paying attention to it, you can miss some really valuable clues that the patient is developing impending respiratory failure and cardiopulmonary collapse. The other thing I'll say just about potential options for sedation or lightening agitation, and this is fair warning, off-label, not routine use. Rob sounds like he likes ketamine. I've introduced dexmedetomidine in this patient group a little bit and have had some really good success in allowing patients to interface with the BiPAP machine as well. There is no evidence on that practice. It is completely anecdotal. And so I'm not encouraging people to do it routinely unless you're very comfortable with using the medicine on a regular basis. But another option for that kind of sedation strategy to allow people who are not interfacing well with the non-invasive positive pressure ventilation.
Really outstanding clinical points. And three of you, really hit it out of the park here and thinking about where we're headed with non-invasive ventilation. Certainly, we've come a ways over the past 2 decades using it more frequently, but I love how you're pointing out some of these key bedside things to consider when utilizing and implementing this in your next severe asthmatic. Peter, any final comments?
Yeah, I would just emphasize that if we're going to use sedation with non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, that happens with you at the bedside. That's not an order placed in an electronic health record while you go manage five other patients. This is at the bedside. You need to be with the patient, observing their work of breathing, assessing their measurements with the non-invasive, as John had mentioned. But being tuned in with your patient.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's an exclamation point there to end and bring this podcast to a close. We're so thankful that you are listening to this podcast. Please let us know if you have any questions on this particular article, this topic, and any specific details on how to implement it and our thoughts on a little bit more on sedation. Shoot us an email through the website. Happy to continue the conversation. With that, we'll close this podcast out, and we will so look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.